it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So something I thought about last night, and then the caller prompted this, that I think, and I'm not trying to start anything here. This is just my opinion, and it's something I was thinking about.
Well, when you preface it with that, yeah, I'm very curious to see where we're going here. Go ahead.
I think that there is a bigger drop-off from Judge's season from where it was last year to this year than Soto's season from where it was last year to this year. Where remember the conversation was, well, Soto without Judge is not going to be as impactful as or as effective.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's been the other way. Now, I know Judge has been banged up.
That tells you all you need to know.
No, it's not all you need to know.
I mean, what did 55 home runs if he didn't get hurt this year? But keep going. I'm listening.
He's played 133 games so far.
And he missed 20.
Okay, he missed 20 games. How many? What's he going to have realistically home
it's
runs?
80 at-bats, even if he has 7.
Yeah, okay. So then he'd have 50 right now.
Yeah, with 20 games to go. 55.
He has 97 ribbies. Last year, he had 58 homers and 144 RBI.
Yeah, now the RBIs would not be
okay, but
the
that,
way. That's so, and that's I'll tribute.
But then that ties it into, and I'm not knocking Judge's season. Obviously, it's been terrific, but there has been a drop-off without Juan Soto. It's not because of that in isolation. Mm-hmm. Judge is a great player regardless. He was great before Juan Soto. He was great with Juan Soto. He'll be great again after Juan Soto, but there is a drop-off in those numbers, specifically ribbies, when you have the guy who's walking more than anybody else on in front of you, and then look at Pete's numbers where they were prior to Soto's arrival versus with Juan Soto here. I do think there is a direct correlation.
I don't think that that's unfair. The RBIs are obviously glaringly down. Part of it is he's missed some time. Part of it is, you know, Soto's not in front of him. I mean, I'll give you that. I'm looking at Judge's numbers, even with the missed time, and really, yeah, he hasn't been Judge for a month or so.
Right.
Leads baseball, not just the American League, baseball. Leads baseball in war, leads baseball in runs, leads baseball in walks, leads baseball in batting average, on base, slugging, OPS, OPS plus, some other stats that I don't even know what the hell they are, total bases, and 30 intentional walks. So, you know, we're sitting here saying a down year. I guess that's kind of what we're saying to an extent.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying there because there was an assumption, even by myself, saying, well, Soto's not going to have the power numbers that he had with the Yankees in Yankee Stadium hitting in front of Judge. That has not been the case. He has not had a drop-off. Only in batting average has Soto really had a drop. Now, it's not something you just gloss over, but as far as the power numbers go, they're almost the same for Juan Soto versus what it was a year ago with the Yankees. And you look at the ribbies that Alonso had the year before. He had 88. He's got 113 now. Do the math with Judge. Yeah, Judge last year 58 and 144, which is just otherworldly. Mm-hmm. And this year a pedestrian 43 and 97. Like, it sounds crazy, but there is a precipitous drop-off.
Oh, I like that word. You know I like that word, precipitous. I also think, though, that you're kind of glossing over a couple things to an extent. Not nuts, but I got to point them out. I got to keep this thing on the rails pertaining to the numbers. All right, so Soto's got more home runs than I thought. I did not think he would flirt. He's going to wind up with 42, 43, 44. I didn't think Soto would get there in city without Judge, without right field. All right? But he's 20 points down in on-base percentage, which for him is that's what he's always measured by, that transcendent skill, which is true. He's 20 points down there. He's down in slugging, and his OPS last year was basically knocking on the door of 1,000. This year, it's closer to 900 than it is basically 950, statistically provable. So I get it. If you want to illuminate the home runs, that's fine. You're not wrong.
Well, just the impact.
If you want to incorporate everything, there's a little nuance there that I'm pointing out.
Just the impact. Obviously, anybody's going to benefit from hitting in front of Aaron Judge.
Well, then put Volpe there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that might hurt everybody else. That might hurt Judge, in fact. But just the drop-off is not there, whereas we didn't look at it the other way thinking, well, Judge's numbers would come down too without Soto in front of him. Obviously, that has been the case as far as ribbies, which also goes back to the point before that the caller made. This is why I bring it up today, that because I was really going to save it for another day. It was just something I was making a note of.
Yeah.
That Alonso, where would he be without Alonso? Yeah, but you can't just minimize the impact that Soto's had in front of him. Juan Soto's having a a terrific year, certainly an all-time Met season. And no, it hasn't been consistent, but it isn't. He's having a great year, filling up the stat sheet all over the place, helping Alonso. Now, Alonso's been great on his own, obviously the 37 doubles, leading the league, all that stuff. The ribbies, you mentioned the 113, but let's not pretend that it doesn't have, at least in part, something to do with Juan Soto.
It might. I'm just doing a little bit of a deeper dive here on the RBIs. Yeah, I mean, I can't really prove this. I mean, he's played at least, in the case of Schwarber, Pete, who's got a ton of ribbies, obviously second behind Schwarber with a .113. Cal Raleigh's played 141 games. He's basically played less than 10 games than even Suarez, who's got a few more than him. Riley Green, really good player for the Tigers. So I'm looking at this and I'm saying, well, I can't prove it, but it's just my thought based on what Judge always does, with or without Soto. If he has those extra 10 games, but he doesn't, I get that. But if he does, he's probably at about, let me see, 106. And then with a decent finish, he's around 120-something. Yeah, I mean, listen, the numbers are the numbers. And the one thing, you know, it's funny, too, because we didn't do this when we were young. I know I didn't, because we didn't have the access to these advanced numbers or even just a deeper dive. Like, when you talked about Hernandez or Carter or Straw, and I focused on Mattingly and Winfield and those guys, like, some of those players had amazing seasons, but they started horrendously or they finished horrendously. But it was always judged on the totality of their numbers. We've gotten into a much deeper dive and a much more nuanced conversation. Like, Juan Soto's numbers are insane. But if Juan Soto does not wake up the rest of the way, and even if he does, it's still undeniable that he stumbled the first 2 months here. There's more fixation on that rather than what you do after 162, which I find interesting. Well, I almost don't know if it's fair.
Right now, whatever Soto has done, right now, prior to the, and he's been on an absolute heater as well, but I'm just saying right now it doesn't matter. It's about the next 2 weeks here, the final 18 games, and then really it doesn't even matter if you get to the postseason. It's all about October. Nobody will care, just like last year. People forgot quickly about Pete Alonso's 88 ribbies or whatever it was once he hit that home run in Milwaukee and hit another one against Philadelphia. So the regular season numbers can be analyzed, and they are, to your point, because people have the access. I'm not into the numbers. You know that.
Yep.
We could have conversations about it. With Soto this year in particular, I've been focused on the numbers. Outside of that, I really don't care. But it doesn't matter once we get to October. That's what it's going to be all about. The BT and Sal Show on the Fan is presented by your Tri-State Cadillac dealers. Cadillac, the official luxury vehicle of those New York Mets. Same thing with Judge. It doesn't matter what the numbers are. Once you get to the postseason, he's got to actually go nuts in the postseason.
This is a big one for him, boy.
Yeah, it's going to be a big one.
He's got to do something this October.
Yankees will be trying to win that division as well out there tonight, taking on the Tigers. Then they got the Red Sox following. So it's going to be a fun, you know, final 2 weeks of the regular season here. Mike is calling from Bayonne. What's up, Mike?
Hey, guys. How you guys doing this morning?
Hey, Mike.
How are you?
I'm good. Hey, listen, there's been at least 10 handful of games, dozen games, that Mendoza's cost this team with some of the decisions that he's made late in games with bringing certain relievers in the game. And it almost feels like sometimes he's actually putting the game when he brings in guys like Static. As far as last night, you know, losing a game 1-0, it's frustrating. We all get it. But, you know, if the Phillies end up taking 3 or 4, possibly sweeping this series, the Mets could find themselves at the end of the week out of a wild card spot, and that's tough because with the remaining schedule coming up, you know, the way this team is playing, God knows what could happen. And, you know, going forward, this organization needs to decide who the permanent third baseman is going to be going forward. And, you know, guys like Acuna, who's the best second baseman on this roster, and there's been a couple times in the last couple weeks where McNeil, the guy is a slug around the bag, and he's not turning tailor-made double plays because his hands are just too slow and is becoming extremely frustrating, and sometimes it's costing his games, you know. So going forward, something has to be done with this roster and to shake up the core. You know, Nimmo.
Remember, though, Mike, this is only year 10. I'm not trying to back David Stearns here because the jury is out for me as well. I mean, he's got the bullseye on him this year in particular, and thank you for the call. But this is only year 2. It's one of the reasons why I got on him a little bit at the deadline, BT, is I wanted them to clean up that kind of mess that they have, whether it was trading Vientos, whether it was trading Beatty, trading McNeil, figure that out, and they didn't do that. And some fans are thankful because Vientos has all of a sudden been on a tear. McNeil, you could play him in center field. They're valuing the bat. You could put him at second base. He's been fine. He's not Acuna, but Acuna can't hit.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the Mets need to figure that out. Beatty's looked great at times defensively at third base.
Yeah, he made a nice play last time where he came in on 1 foot, kind of threw it across
couple
the diamond.
A couple games in a row, he's made some really stellar plays over at third base. So I still think, point is, I still think Stearns is in the process of evaluating what he has here. But there are certainly issues that David Stearns has had even in year two with the Mets.
Agreed. And you also have to understand, though, like when you judge a general manager, you've got to look at what he inherits here. So you inherit Nimmo's, and I'm not trying to dog Nimmo, but you inherit Nimmo's contract, you inherit Marte's contract, you inherit McNeil's contract, you inherit the, obviously, Senga. Lindor, Senga, 5 years, $75 million. So there's certain things that you've got to navigate. It's not nearly as easy as we make it out to be. Quick question for you. Any interest in strength of schedule? Does that matter to you? To kind of give a little...
Who do you got? The three Mets, yeah, the Mets, three Giants, teams, Reds?
I didn't even look at the Reds. I've got the Padres because yeah. I wouldn't shut them out here. So the Mets have the ninth toughest schedule, 18 left, all right? The Padres have the...
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
29th toughest. So that Padres schedule is easy.
Okay, but they play the Mets three times.
You know, I know, for sure. And that could change everything.
Now, the Padres right now have a three-game lead on the Mets for the second spot.
They do. They play the Brewers, they play the Mets, they play the Reds, and they finish up they've got the Rockies for four, the White Sox for three, the Diamondbacks for three. So that's 29th easiest there. San Francisco, we ran through some of their teams before, but they're 23rd. 23rd easiest.
And
or
the
toughest.
Mets, the Mets is the ninth.
Mets is not Mets is top 10.
Yeah,
difficulty.
Good. They're gonna have to earn it. I'd rather that. I don't want to know backing
I wouldn't.
In.
I'm looking forward to the Yankees playing the White Sox at the end of the season.
Well, maybe that's different. Whatever. I don't want the Mets to back in. I want them to start playing postseason baseball sooner than later because then it'd be on a roll once they get there. There's 18 games to go. Like, it's no more, all right, even if it's 30 games to go, like, now's the time to start waking up. Hey, last night, the reason why I was so critical is not because I thought the division was realistic, although, sure, you win last night, gives you hope, it extended, right? The reason why I was frustrated with last night is that's how a playoff game will play out a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
A one-run game. Doesn't have to be 1-0, but a one-run game. Drama. You're on the road against their best closer. You got a chance. Pete Alonso leads off with a base hit. Here we go. Gives me goosebumps thinking about it. This is how much I love playoff baseball. All right, leadoff man is on first. What are you going to do? Pinch run. Right idea, wrong guy to pinch run because Mendy shot the Acuna bullet
because
earlier.
He messed up.
That's a problem. Now, again.
Well, that's what I said to start the show.
No, well, so did I. I mean, that's the one issue that I got on. I was talking about that. I'm not saying he's been a problem overall. Last night in isolation, yes, one game, that was an issue. And by the way, it's not the sole reason why they lost, but he could have helped them have that bullet with Acuna there. But the feel of that game last night, the drama of it, you're going up against one of the best the National League has to offer, if not the best, one run game on the road. Hard-fought battle, whatever. Their pitcher shut you down. You still have a chance in the ninth inning. Tough to lose those games. It happens. It's going to happen to the teams that win the World Series. So that's why, to me, last night was like a playoff game. They have to treat every game from here on out like a playoff game. Not going to win them all.
I think they're trying to. Yeah. I don't think that there's, you know, the Mets are coming in. Yeah, you know, whatever. We got some time left. We're good. We're pretty much in the playoffs, even though it's still got to make sure you get there. Mm-hmm. I don't think that the Mets' play is attributable to a lack of focus or a lack of, you know, engagement. I just think that they've been maddeningly inconsistent all year, which at this point of the season, that's kind of who you are.
Correct.
It's up to you to dispel that. It's not up to me to say, oh, I think they're going to do this because I just think it. I'm going to react to the first 145 games that you show me.
Correct. They have been maddeningly inconsistent. We all know that. They know that. So has everybody else in the sport. Now, why is that the case? I don't know, BT. I can't. You look at individual players. Cody Bellinger, for example, great. Started out his career great. Goes in a little bit of a funk. Working his way up. Like, he's just one player. Pick a player, any player.
Corbin Carroll had a down year last year.
Okay, bingo. So there you go. Like, even these great, this guy burst onto the scene, and then he struggles. Like, for the most.
The Orioles is a team this year. No, I just think it's a lot of parity.
It's all over the. Okay, maybe.
I think baseball's become harder.
Maybe that's the point. Maybe the data analytics has. I have no idea. All I do know is that there's inconsistency everywhere across the sport. Ray is calling from Waterbury, Connecticut. What's up, Ray?
Hi, guys. Great show as usual. You got to score when you facing an elite closer like Durant. Mm-hmm. It's hard to string together three hits. Mauricio had a bad read. I mean, the ball was way over Castellanos' head,
Castellanos.
And it kind of bounced around in the corner. If he had a bad read, where's the third base coach saying, waving him over instead of watching Mauricio play it halfway? You got to score on that.
Ray, okay, fair. That's your read. I disagree. But those are two very separate things. The read that Mauricio got and the third base coach imploring him to run once, and I actually don't think that Mauricio got a bad jump, although I'm in the minority. I know Tadzio said to the contrary. We'll get into it, obviously, coming up. But to me, once, if you perceive it to be a bad jump or just being smart to make sure it's not caught, once you commit to that, I'm talking about from Mauricio's perspective, there's no way in hell you can send him home. SNY showed the replay three times. Bryce Harper had the baseball, and Mauricio's on third base. You can't wave him there. Would have been out by 15 feet.
Agreed. Can't send him home. Now, why didn't you think? We could do it now. I did think he had a bad read.
A lot of people did, yeah. So, and I initially did too.
Right.
And see, to me, if the ball's in the air and it was more of a liner,
right,
it's easier to judge the depth perception. So if you look at, I thought SNY's camera work was phenomenal. They really did a good job with this. If you look at Mauricio, what his first inclination was, you know, he kind of took three or four steps, not running, not like just kind of, all right, I'm off the base here. And then I don't think that he knew if the ball was going to be caught because it was not in the air. It was more of a liner. And if you look at it now, it hit the base of the wall. So that validates what I'm saying. It didn't hit the top, didn't hit the middle. It literally hit the base, like the dirt and the base of the wall. So Castellanos, from Mauricio's vantage point, there's a part of him that's saying, geez, that ball might get caught. Now, there's also a part of him that doesn't seem to be a very instinctual baseball player.
Correct.
And he's slow as dirt. Like, he don't run. So what I tweeted this. I'm like, hey, and you know, whatever. I geeked out. And I looked at the sprint speed. And I looked at Pete's. Obviously, Pete's. I think Pete's 9%, which is horrendous. And Mauricio's 13%, which is also horrendous. But I would almost value Pete's ability because Pete's a smart base runner.
He would have read it better. 100%.
He would have read it better. And you may have had a chance to send him. Now, I don't want to get nailed to the plate in that situation. I get the closer. That's a good point about the back-to-back-to-back hits. That's asking for a lot against a great pitcher. But I am going to exonerate Mauricio, because that was a tougher ball to read because it was a liner, not a pop-up.
I'm not going to exonerate him. What I will say is he should not have been pinch running in that spot.
That I agree with.
That's on Mendy for not having Acuna there. Acuna's, he's on the roster for one reason. One reason only. Well, two reasons, I should say. Defensive replacement and speed. That's it. So that's what you need to save that bullet for. Meaning, you have a lead going into the ninth inning. Obviously, you don't need him for speed. Now you want him in for defense to protect that lead. If you are trailing, he's got to be glued to the bench until you can fire that bullet and get him on base in that exact spot. He would have had a better read, and he's lightning fast, and I would have sent him. It's worth the risk against a great closer. I'm consistent with this. Against the Guardians earlier in the season, I was saying the same thing about Sarbaugh. Ninth inning, Mets coming back here.
I remember.
Tough closer. Lindor ripped a double down the line. Like, you got to score. This is the big leagues, dude. The Mets have had issues with scoring guys from second base on a single and scoring a guy from first base on a double. Like, that can't happen in a one-run game against a great closer on the road.
Yeah.
You've got to be able to score him. So Mauricio wasn't the right runner. Even with that, though, I did think. Now, I didn't watch it 100 times.
Oh, but I was
did,
geeking out. Rewinding,
I did see it a
frame
couple
by
times.
Frame.
I thought he had a awkward, like, tentative, trepid initial getting off the base. It wasn't aggressive. It was more like, I better not get caught here.
Which, by the way, is not the wrong mindset in that spot in the game.
I want aggression there.
But what if he's overly aggressive? And what if Castellanos makes a good play? Then we're ripping him for being too aggressive.
No, I mean, he should be able to still get back at that point, even if you're halfway. The other part about your theory is saying that he can't read it because it wasn't in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Bingo. It's a line drive, bro. Read it right. If it were hit in the air, I could see the hesitation and waiting.
I think it's the opposite.
See, on a line drive, you should expect that, especially
why?
Looking at it. No,
that's the exact opposite of what I'm saying, because think about this. Just take a wide receiver and a quarterback, and not even in a game, you just throw the football on a practice field, right? If I throw a line drive to you, let's say you just run it a little 20-yard go route, right? And I don't put air under it. Is it more probable that you'll catch that, or one where I throw with a lot of air and I overshoot you? We know the answer. It's the former. It's the one that is lower and closer to you. And that line drive was lower and closer to Castellanos than a pop-up or a deep towering shot that would have banged off the wall. Now, listen, I even do this with the kids that I coach. I am a massive proponent in putting stress on the defense. Like, people don't associate. They think think, you know, baseball, but stress, which means you got to get the ball, you got to hit the cut.
Make them make the play.
Make them make multiple plays. Yes, you got the cut, the first baseman.
Fueled it cleanly.
Bang, give me a good throw to the dish, give me a good tag. Boom. But there's four or five things that have to happen. So generally, I am always a proponent of that. But Mauricio, based on the read, and we differ on whether or not it was a bad read or a good read. I'm not saying it was good. I'm just saying it wasn't bad. But there was no way at that point you could have sent him based on what he did the first 2 seconds of that play. He's at third base. The ball's at first base.
That I agree with.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.